Grizzly War.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Bro, I got to maintain. Insane.
7 minutes after the hour of five, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, taking you home on the Drive at Five again, through the spritz outside, through the rain. Not quite the hawk is talking, but boy, there's a chill out there. It's you're gonna feel it in the marrow of your bone. It's damp out there. But in nearby Mahwah, just to give you an update, is we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. Based on a threat to shoot up a middle school, back in October, cops were out in a phalanx patrolling the middle school there with assault weapons. And when questions have been offered to the school authorities and to the principal as to why, who is this kid, who made the threat, they basically say, well, he's dealing with mental health issues. There's confidentiality involved here. And then earlier today, the governor of Florida, Governor Scott, said he's going to seek a threat of violence court order on certain individuals who seem to have a predisposition to want to settle their problems either physically or with knives or guns. But that might also require some kind of a mental health report. And then who has access to that? And in the aftermath of the Parkland High School killings of 17 and the injuries of many others, the President of the United States and others who have been speaking out against the violence on the school campuses have talked about it more as a mental health issue than a gun control issue.
We are going to be very strong on background checks. I've spoken with many of our people in Congress, our senators, our congressmen and women, and there's a movement on to get something done. We want to be very powerful on background checks. When we're dealing with the mentally ill, as we were in this last case, he was a very sick person and somebody that should have been nabbed.
Now, you can get a background check on someone who's been pinched, who's been arrested, who hasn't paid their child support. Yeah, you can get all that. But can you get a background check on somebody who has been seeking mental health care, either from a psychologist or psychiatrist or from a mental health facility? Nobody seems to be addressing that, so I figure I'd get on America's leading psychiatrist, board certified in adult, adolescent, and forensic psychiatry. You've seen him all over the boob tube. I've had occasion to lay down on a stained sofa and convey to him all the demons that take place in my belly of the beast on a regular basis. It's Dr. Keith Ablau. Thanks for joining us again, Keith.
Hey, pal. Glad to be here.
Now, explain this to me. Everyone is talking about a mental health check. And I'm saying to myself, a mental health check? You'd probably have a better chance of getting Barack Obama's birth certificate than somebody's mental health record. Is that correct?
Well, it ought to be correct, right, that these things are sacred. It doesn't have to be the case, by the way, that there is never any disclosure. If a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a social worker becomes concerned enough that there could be violence, there are things that that person's duty-bound to do. And, you know, we don't have to go and worry about everybody who's taking antidepressants or sleep medicine or anti-anxiety medicine, because that's so many people, millions and millions and millions of people, and they don't hurt anybody. The net doesn't have to be, the filter doesn't have to be very fine. All of the perpetrators, almost all, have been male, fascinated with guns and video games. They've done things already. for which they could have been charged. But nobody said, charge them. Hey, malicious threatening, coming to somebody's house and burying weapons in their backyard. Now, if somebody calls the police and says, hey, this 19-year-old has buried guns in my backyard and I don't want them there, you would think that would be enough, wouldn't you, to say, hey, you know, that's not a proper custodian of firearms. Let's look more specifically at this person. Oh, when we interview him, he doesn't seem really to be well. Let's therefore ask the family to urge him to share his mental health records. Lots could be done, Curtis. There can be enforced treatment in the community. If you're charged with a crime, a smart judge can say, look, we're not going to come down on you like a ton of bricks, but we are going to do a continued without a finding, and as part of your probation, you're going to have enforced psychiatric care. Or you can go to jail, but you'll probably want the enforced psychiatric care.
Now, the whole notion of your relationship with your patients, and you've dealt with some of the biggest threats to society that we've ever produced in humanity. If there was not confidentiality between you and your patients, what is the likelihood that these folks would be coming to you seeking some kind of remedy to the demons that plague them?
There absolutely has to be confidentiality because too many people are going to say, I don't want to go anywhere near anybody's office to do with mental health care if I'm going to rely on that person to be duty-bound to break my confidentiality if he or she thinks, hey, maybe, possibly, this could be somebody that I think shouldn't have a gun. On the other hand, many people who are at risk for terrible violence, they will seek mental health care, and part of, frankly, what they're looking for is to not do it in a certain way. In other words, how much did Mr. Cruz have to do in order to prevent the ultimate terrible outcome of so many dead and him destined for life in prison or being executed? What would he have had to do? I mean, he's burying weapons in someone's backyard, apparently. He's coming to school with bullets and a knife in his backpack. He's threatening people. There are 911 calls where they say, you know, Mr. Nicholas Cruz, he's headed to go get another gun, and this is somebody who's had a gun to people's heads. Okay. I mean, if we can't simply do our jobs, and instead we want to change sweeping national mental health care policy and gun policy because we can't get a D-minus as law enforcement and mental health care professionals to simply do our job, then shame on us. We're gonna get Congress to act? How about individuals get their heads screwed on straight and do what they're supposed to do instead of getting an F?
Well, what about those in the past who have slaughtered? I'm thinking of the guy who came dressed as Joker to that movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. Right, James Holmes. He was under care. In fact, his psychiatrist was keeping meticulous notes. And those notes almost had to be chopped out of her hands. She wouldn't give them up. What is the code of the psychiatrist when it comes to the intimate details of a person's personal struggles that sometimes you're writing down and keeping track of? How can a court get hold of that? How can law enforcement get hold of that? Or is that not at all possible?
Well, the way that they should get hold of it is that the clinician, him or herself, should say at a certain point, look, now all bets are off the table, either because you've identified someone who you intend to harm, or because given your level of symptoms combined with your access to firearms, for instance, I'm sending you to a locked psychiatric facility. We all have that ability, by the way. We can send people who qualify, quote-unquote, to locked psychiatric facilities for an evaluation. Now, that may not yield a definitive cure, but it certainly flags the person in a different fashion. And you have to have the resolve to do that five times, if need be, because you know that there's a risk there. So in this case, this person should have been in that position. He should have been hospitalized multiple times. We haven't heard that. hospitalized against his will multiple times, his family members could then have petitioned, for instance, for guardianship or substituted judgment and said, look, you're going to receive these medicines whether you like it or not. And if you won't take them, you're going to end up in the hospital again. Now, that's the kind of care you'd hope for, because nobody wants their son, brother, sister, loved one to do something so horrible that they are seen to be a monster through and through. It's certainly, you know, I mean, it's not a popular thing to say, but I'd have to count amongst the victims in this case, in a certain way, the perpetrator.
Well, now, without knowing the full details of Cruz's mental health background, he claims at some point that he heard demons. Demons urged him to do the shooting. We heard that from the .44 caliber killer, David Berkowitz. He was responding to the dog, Sam. The demons were telling him to go out and kill, kill, kill. Are there drugs now readily available that can calm the demons down to the point where they're not affecting a person's line of thought?
Absolutely. There are drugs that are orally given. There are drugs that are injected that last a month. And, you know, while you don't want to take someone's rights away willy-nilly by any means, if you've got someone who's repeatedly threatening violence and, say, somebody who for whom the police have been to his house, say, 27 times, like this guy, it might be that you would want, with the court's imprimatur, to have him receiving these medicines and being tested for illicit drugs to make sure that he doesn't become even more impulsive by court order. These tools exist. I would argue we don't need to go collecting semi-automatic rifles from people. We don't need to stop bump stocks. Like, what a distraction. I'm a huge Trump fan, but talk about nonsense. You're going to go get some hardware from people, and that's going to somehow stop mass killings? Do we think the killers are also not creative?
Oh, no. In fact, your clients and others out there have proven to be extraordinarily creative. That's Dr. Keith Ablo. He's America's psychiatrist. And boy, he was able to take us through all the impediments that exist to trying to get someone's mental health record so that a court or law enforcement or even a gun shop owner would know about it and factor that into their purchase of a weapon.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
Maybe the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Gabriel. And I see the enabler, the Medici, the funder for Senator Bobby Menendez and all of his trips. The infamous Dr. Melgen got 17 years for Medicare fraud. On the line to discuss it, Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Mike.
Hi, Curtis. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so apparently he's ripped off the Medicare fund more so than almost any other doctor in the history of it.
It's pretty astonishing, isn't it? I mean, this is really an amazing case. This guy was charged with, I believe, 67 different crimes of ripping off Medicare. Either he is immensely stupid, or just incredibly, you know, brazen to do such a thing. Not believing he would eventually be caught.
I know, but remember, he had the fixer. His friendship, as he always said, my friend, that was their defense, my friend. The U.S. Senator Menendez would come to his rescue every time some of those expenditures were being questioned, correct?
Well, actually, no, that's not the case. What's interesting about the Menendez case is that Menendez, it's hard to understand what Solomon Melgen actually felt he could get out of Menendez, because Melgen has never talked, he's never testified, he's never said what he really wanted out of Menendez. But what we know from the Menendez trial and the facts that were presented there was that Menendez wasn't able to deliver on any favor for Melgen of any consequence. For example, Melgen felt that he was being billed wrongly by Medicare. So Senator Menendez called up the federal office that administers Medicare and tried to get some answers there, and tried to, if you believe the testimony, tried to, you know, perhaps even, you know, try to get some favorable treatment toward Melgen, and that did not happen whatsoever. As a matter of fact, one could argue that actually led to the investigation by the FBI into Melgen's Medicare fraud and now his prison sentence.
Now, Mike Kelly, although he may have been the most egregious, Solomon Melgen, friend of U.S. Senator Bobby Menendez,
right,
he's not alone. This is happening everywhere. If it's not Medicare ripoffs by doctors, it's Medicaid ripoffs and these medical mills. Who oversees this? Is there a way to sort of like see a red flag and immediately know you're getting ripped off, the taxpayers are getting ripped off?
It's a complicated process, as I understand it, Curtis. I mean, I think that the federal government understands that this kind of thing can happen and probably happens more than they would like. In Melgen's case, it was fairly obvious because he was submitting paperwork that the FBI just merely looked at and other investigators merely looked at, and they mounted a case against him. And the case was pretty much open and shut, as I understand it. And that's why Melgen, I think, is really in deep trouble. I mean, this is a guy who was one of the most I hate to say popular, but one of the largest users of Medicare in the country. And now he's going to prison for 17 years. And as I said at the start here, is that either he was incredibly clueless or unbelievably brazen. It's just amazing to me that somebody who had the training to be a medical doctor would actually make this kind of, if you want to call it, mistake or crime.
Well, you know, I look at it this way. Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record, he bragged about how he was Harvard trained as a medical expert and ophthalmologist. Ophthalmologist, you know, like Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul is, like Bashar Assad is, the butcher of Syria. They're ophthalmologists. Oh, boy, did I butcher that word. But you get the point. They're eye doctors. And yet, I guess they figured, in this case, Dr. Melgen could get over on the U.S. taxpayers. He did for a long, long time. And I believe, with the Capo de Tutte, the most crooked one on Capitol Hill's assistance, Senator Bobby Menendez.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really try to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
You're always worth it, and you deserve it, the way you work it.
Yours truly here, continuing to take you home on the drive home at 5. And for many of you, Friday night might be that one night of the week that you've scheduled in advance, that urge to merge with the one you love. But increasingly, particularly with the millennials taking over for us baby boomers in terms of percentage of the population, they have started to actually schedule sex in a marriage or a relationship, and sometimes specifically to try to save a marriage that may be on the wane. On the line to discuss that is Dr. Judy Kuriansky, clinical psychologist, certified sex therapist, and the radio voice of sexology for years here in the tri-state area. Thanks for jumping on board again, Doc.
All right, everybody, get out their handheld. Open up the calendar and schedule in sex. That's what I advise. And it's not just for millennials, Curtis. It's for baby boomers and everybody of all ages. And I, as you just said, the premier sex therapist next to Dr. Ruth for years and years, I have been advising that for many years. So to me, this is excellent, excellent advice.
Now, how exactly do you go about doing that? And how often, let's say, a week should a couple that is having a normal relationship, or let's say one in which it's obvious that the relationship is on the wane, How often should they be having copulation and fornication?
A lot of the research, and even one of the most recent studies of tens of thousands of couples, say that once a week is the amount of time. You should never go under that amount or you're going to lose it. And so I would agree with that. But here's the real thing that's important, Curtis, is that in that study they were talking even about advice of having sex scheduled in. And I don't agree with that part. I say have intimacy and time together scheduled in. And as for the number of times, Curtis, twice a week. And at least for just an hour. That doesn't take a whole lot of time for all those busy millennials. So twice a week, 1 hour, and just for time together. It doesn't have to be for sex, per se, because that creates pressure and expectations. Ah, we have to do the whole way? No. Just time together, no matter what it is, and if it leads to sex, that's fine.
So, Dr. Judy Kuriansky, if you're intimate for, let's say, 55 minutes out of the hour, and then you get it on for like 5 minutes, is that okay? Because normally a woman might say, you mean that's it? That's all?
I would say it's okay. I would never put pressure on the guy. And you're saying 5 minutes? Really, Curtis, you're giving guys a lot. Usually it's the 3 minute.
Wow.
So that's okay. And then the next time, it can be your turn. See, that's another twist on the advice. Twice a week, 1 hour of intimacy. If it's going to be him reaching his climax one time, then guess what? It's her time the next time, taking turns.
Now, Dr. Judy, isn't it true that it's really the woman who more often needs the intimacy rather than the guy? It's almost like he can go into turbocharge routine within minutes, and a woman, she's not. It's not a physical thing. It's like if you don't set the emotional tone, she's going to shut down on you.
Well, that is entirely true. And in fact, the research has shown it takes a woman 15 minutes to get at least as warmed up as the guy could be in and out and finished in 3 minutes. So that's a big time difference, and you're absolutely right about that. However, I don't want to put any pressure on the couples for starting at least with their 2 times a week of intimacy. And if it's going to lead to sex one time, then taking turns means the next time there's going to be no sex, and we'll just be together. Even, you're going to be surprised about that, I don't even care if you watch TV together or read to each other. Anything, as long as there are no interruptions. And by the way, that goes to the point of if there's any kids around who knock on the door or who start screaming, Mommy, Daddy, you put a clock on the door that says Mommy and Daddy are busy, and this is the time that we'll be ready for you.
So, sort of almost like at a hotel, do not disturb until this time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because too many couples are so busy not only with their time, Curtis, but, oh, the children, we have to put them to bed, I have to read them a story, oh, they're calling for me now. No, you have to train the kids that Mommy and Daddy have their private time.
We'll appreciate that. That's Dr. Judy Kuriansky reacting to a report that says scheduling your sex life can not only save your marriage, but it's something that you should do that conforms to both of your schedules. I don't know my. It's another thing to put on the do list.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Oh, as we continue on the drive home at 5, the sound of this hip-hop monster Fetty Wap must mean... That's right. Right after the drive home at 5, I'm headed uptown, downtown. The two locations in Patterson where gangbangers have been at war. and people are held hostage in their homes and their places of business. But the worst of the many areas in Paterson, New Jersey, is the Fourth Ward. And we have been summoned in there by a developer, Charles Florio, who's taking these tenements, and he is supersizing them, so to speak, to make them family-oriented. But without any public safety, you know, it becomes the domain of the dope fiends, the junkies, the dealers, the many gangbangers who are the enforcers, and it provides a location for many of you who right now are driving in off of I-80. Don't kid me. You're going to score. It's a Friday night. It's a big night. And naturally, whether it's heroin, opioids, fentanyl, reefer, whatever your drug of choice, you know it's one-stop shopping in Paterson. And in fact, if all of a sudden your local yokel drug dealer has been busted and has been taken out of circulation and put in the Passaic County lockup for a while, you also know that you can go and get your drugs in other locations, because for every one who gets locked up, there's another two who emerge. And so you're contributing to the problem. You who are from Leave It to Beaverland, Father Knows Best, Little House on the Prairie, the surrounding suburbs where there is wealth, there is equity, there is spendable income, and you figure two ways that you can benefit from the drug trafficking in Paterson. A, you can go in there in a stealth-like manner, park your car, walk into your drug house, shoot up or smoke up your drug of choice, and then go back to Leave It to Beaverland, your suburb. Or if you're an entrepreneur, you figure, hey, I'll come in, I'll deal with black drug dealers or Dominican drug dealers, and, you know, they'll sell it to me as the wholesaler. Then I'm the retailer, so when I go back to other parts of Passaic County or nearby areas, I can fetch a price three times the amount in which it's being sold in the streets of Paterson, in a much safer environment and climate, because let's face it, there are a lot of fellow drug users like yourself who are not going to venture into the belly of the beast. Well, let me warn all of you that tonight we are appearing at a town hall meeting at the Bethel AME Church on Auburn Street. That's right, in the belly of the beast. It almost looks like a scene out of New Jack City at the invitation of Reverend Boyer. And we're going to present our plan, the Guardian Angel plan, to take back the streets. We've been invited in by Charles Florio, a developer, and he's going to give us some space. Even though you have Police Director Jerry Speciale, he won't meet with us. And a corrupt political system that is in badly need of a political colonic. I mean, two of the last few mayors have been locked up with the key thrown away, and rightfully so. Barnes, the Republican, and Joey Jose Torres, the Democrat, who has been denied early release. Let me applaud you. Let me applaud you. Keep that guy locked up. Keep him away from any kind of assets that the people of Paterson or Passaic County have, because he's a crook. But there are crooks galore in Paterson. And we're going to have our hands full. So if you'd like to come on out and see yours truly and the Guardian Angels in action, be at the Bethel AME Church starting at 6 o'clock. I'll get there a little later. And you'll get a little fire and brimstone about how to take back not only areas of Paterson that we'll be engaged in, but areas that may have sort of been impacted in the negative because of drug dealing and gang banging in your community.